And it's 2:59 here at Coast Community Radio. Time for Arts Live and Local. I'm wishing everybody safety and healing and a good sense of humor. That goes to you, of course, in Boutelier's Point. It's 70 degrees in the studio. It's 48 degrees outside, but not too bad, not too bad. It's been raining, but everything is fine. You are about to hear Arts Live and Local and find out why everything is way better than fine. It's actually wonderful because, as ever, this region is full of incredible artists, musicians, everything in the arts and culture area for uplifting, which we need. I want to send out wishes for all in need of healing. We know who we are, and with gratitude for a wonderful community. Let's start right out with some gorgeous music played by my first guest, and that is the music by Clara Schumann. And the guest, well, see if you, some of you might be able to figure it out. Leave the music on in the background for as long as I can stand it. Otherwise, sometimes it's a choice. So for those of you who are local, I'm afraid I'm going to have to take the music out. It's way too beautiful. I want to just listen to it. So the music is from an album called Romance, the piano music of Clara Schumann. And my guest, for those of you in the local area, probably figured it out, is Jennifer Goodenberger. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Carol.
Because Jennifer is the queen of Clara Schumann.
The Clara Queen.
There you go. Queen Clara. For those of you who don't know her, let me just give you a little bit of background. And though, even though many of you have seen and heard Jennifer play music, you may not know about the rest of her life. Or perhaps you've seen her in another guise and didn't realize she was, I don't know, would you say primarily a musician? Or
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because Jennifer is a pianist, a composer, and a visual artist and poet. And she has actually, she was a KMUN programmer also.
That's
in the
right.
early days.
In the early days.
And she wrote and published or had published a book. Mm-hmm. What was that?
It was called Subject Guide to Classical Instrumental Music. And every week here on KMUN, I was doing a program that was about something like trees or Russia or something. And I was trying to find lists of those, and that this book didn't exist, so I wrote it.
I love it.
Kind of get dedicated to KMUN in a lot of ways, because it was based on my work here that I created
inspired.
That book.
Yeah, and very, very useful. The concerts, you also use concepts when you perform. And this particular one is Classical Music at the Movies. Mm-hmm. And again, I thought, now, what is this going to be? So I know Jennifer for many years in the many areas, and I can vouch for her being an engaging presenter, speaker, extremely knowledgeable, and accessible, I guess I would say, so that there's a lot to learn. Now I have in front of me the program for tomorrow's concert. This is a 2 o'clock concert, so whatever else you have going in the evening, this is a fantastic opportunity to come to the Performing Arts Center for a wonderful concert. What I was going to say is this program by itself is an education.
It is.
What did you? So I did not realize it was going to be. This is a real keeper.
Yeah.
So what happened? Have you done this before?
I have. This is actually my fourth Music at the Films concert. And I started doing it as a fundraiser for a film festival in California that contacted me and wanted these concerts. And so the first one was just love songs at the movies. And then there was one about cowboy music at the movies, which was a whole lot of fun.
You played the cowboy
music? I did. Oh, Magnificent Seven. And it was great.
Fun.
And then last year's was I actually stepped back to classical music last year, which I had been away from for a long, 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 long time. And last year's was Classical Piano at the Movies, and in that one I talked about films where you saw an actor playing the piano, and so I talked about the training that an actor would go through and what that actor's background was to be able to perform.
Do they usually in movies like that
anymore?
Does the actor
the actors really have to be trained.
Wow.
Now in the past you could see some pretty bad faking, but then there's something like Katharine Hepburn, who actually was a pianist and did wonderful faking. She's in several films where she portrays a pianist.
She does wonderful
faking. And then somebody like Gary.
So when you say faking, what do you mean?
Well, it looks like they're playing. Mm-hmm. And if a pianist is watching them play, they'll go, oh, yeah, they're pretty much in the right place. Or, hey, they're actually playing the right notes. But they're not actually doing the recording.
Okay.
It's not on the soundtrack. What they're not playing.
And nowadays
it still is not, except for somebody like Holly Hunter in the piano did her own work and recorded her own work. So that was pretty extraordinary.
And was she a pianist to begin
with? She was to begin with.
Okay.
But somebody like Gary Oldman, who portrayed Beethoven in Immortal Beloved, never had played the piano before, and he did a stunning job, because as a pianist you really look at him and think, oh, he's playing this.
So, and he was.
Well, he was, but again, he was playing pianos that the sound had been, the keys were going down, but there was no sound coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody else was doing the actual recording, but if you didn't know that, it looked like he was really playing.
Right. And for someone like me, I wouldn't know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's really, I know the upscale and the downscale, but for a pianist to give that kind of an endorsement. Mm-hmm. So somebody would have to actually take quite a bit of time to study.
Yes, some of these actors really do.
How exciting you know, maybe they say, forget it. I ain't taking that part, I guess. So what you've done here, now, we played Clara Schumann, and why I said people around you would know.
Right. Well, I, but she was used to be my counter ego or something, I guess you'd say. And I used to spend an awful lot of time talking about her life and performing
and
concerts and dressing like her. And actually, I stopped playing classical music when I stopped doing that with her. So I stopped playing classical music in 97.
And it's been that long.
And I only came back last year.
So in the meantime, don't think that she hasn't been playing. Jennifer has been composing. How many albums
do you have?
Eight albums.
Yeah. Well, one of those is Clara, so that's classical.
Okay, right. And one of them is the one that intentionally puts me to sleep each night.
Right.
Which you created with hospice in mind.
Yes,
and that's a marvelous piece for helping people to relax and let go. What brought you back to classical last year?
I think this whole movie thing did. I just wanted to do something. Just the whole idea of looking at how classical music is used in films got me back into it. And now here I am doing it the second year. And then I said, okay, I'm not going to do it another year. Oh, wait a minute. I've already got my program together for next year's.
Oh.
And next year I'm doing Chopin at the movie. So it's going to be a whole program of Chopin.
Wow.
So suddenly,
I seem to be enjoying this.
I am. I'm not sure that I'm back permanently. And I'm certainly not back exclusively.
I was wondering about
certainly
that.
Not exclusively.
You're still doing your own music.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, now, you've been performing for 40 years. I don't know how that's possible since you look
so
about
young.
39 right now.
Yeah.
But and you actually also did music academically. You've got a master's degree from Northwestern in music
composition.
And have you been playing since you were a child?
Since I was nine.
Since you were nine. Okay. And you have a brother who's on
Percussion.
And then one who's in buildings.
Yes. Yes. And a sister who quilts.
Okay. So the whole family is involved in the creative arts in different ways. And obviously, when I mentioned that about hospice, the healing power of music and the arts, which is partly why I'm here. Tell us about this concert, though, because we played Clara Schumann because that's a natural. Didn't I give you a birthday present one year?
You did.
Holy
you gave me a, this last year you gave me this bracelet or something?
Yeah, I found and it said Clara, and I thought, oh my goodness, that must be Clara Jennifer. But the concert tomorrow is everybody. So tell us how this works.
So the way that this one is different than last year's. Last year's was all music that had been written for the piano and then was seen being performed in a film. This year, it's more about the soundtrack and classical music being used to really enhance, not a drop the needle sort of situation, like, oh, we need a couple of minutes, let's just drop the needle on Claire de Lune. That's not it at all. It's really where the music is inherent in the film. And so some of this music is symphonic, so I had to bring it down to make it sound like it was for the piano. The bigger things were, though, there are two concertos on the program, and bringing them down to make them sound like they are a piano solo. And these are basically my arrangements, and I'm very, very, very proud of myself for the work I did.
I'm sure that's there, way beyond.
There are certainly for these concertos, there are some piano reductions, but I didn't find a good one. And like the Beethoven Emperor, you know, I found one, but it cut out parts of it. And so I went in and rewrote all of that. And the Rachmaninoff, again, just a very, because the Rachmaninoff in a way is a kind of a trio between the piano and the clarinet and the orchestra. And how you bring that down to one. So it's kind of the themes from the Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto.
Interesting.
Yeah. So those are things that are, I put a whole lot of heart and soul into those. There are some things that are straight out for the piano, like the Clara one, which mm-hmm. is from a film, a Franco-German-Hungarian film called Geliebte Clara, which means Beloved Clara, which is the story of Clara and Robert's life at the end of their marriage before he attempted suicide and at the point that Johannes Brahms comes into their mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful, beautiful film.
Oh, and I see you're that. Doing Brahms.
Yeah.
Robert, Johannes, and Clara.
Right, and that particular piece is Robert wrote this theme, which is the theme we heard right at the top of the show, and then Clara came around and for his birthday wrote a bunch of variations on that theme. Mm. And then Brahms thought that was a pretty good idea. So he came along and he wrote some variations on that theme. And so in the film you actually hear some of this and you see them playing it in the film too.
Okay, now some of these films are like Brief Encounter. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the years. Oh, they're all over the map, aren't they? Mm-hmm. From the 40s through the late 90s. But some of them are less well known. You're going to be giving us, in addition to this wonderful program, which people will get to keep in their mm-hmm. music libraries. What are you going to do at the concert?
Well, I particularly like gossip. And I think if you can give some gossip, good gossip, around a film that it in a lot of ways makes it, people want to go out and see it.
Yeah.
So for instance, Portrait of Jenny, David Selznick was looking for a vehicle for Jennifer Jones because he was in love with her. He wasn't married to her, but he was in love with her and looking for a vehicle for her. So that evolved eventually into this. And so I'll be talking about that. I'll be talking about the composers, the soundtrack composers that came in and took the classical composer's music. For instance, the man who put all the music together for Portrait of Jenny is Dmitri Tomkin. And normally he's thought of as High Noon and uh-huh. Gunfight at the OK Corral and
right.
those kind of films. And yet he's the one who took this Debussy.
Man.
And then a lot of people look at this film and they go, wow, it looks kind of like a Hitchcock film. Although this was pre-Hitchcock. And then you find out that the composer who was to work on the film before Tomkin came along was Bernard Herrmann, who was Hitch's composer. So there's
okay.
all these really interesting interrelationships with the films and
this is
and
wonderful.
Just talking about yeah. the background of the film. So predominantly, I will be talking about the films and not so much the composers at the concert. Mm-hmm. And kind of let the music speak for itself.
Wow. So I can see now why you would come back to this, though, because mm-hmm. you are a person who likes challenges.
Yeah.
And this definitely was a challenge, just from what you described before mm-hmm. about bringing that music together. It's also very exciting for those of us who are not so familiar to enjoy mm-hmm. the music, learn something about the movie, and get the gossip without even
right.
having to look for it.
Right,
this is
yeah.
terrific, Jennifer. Did you have to, what do you have to do?
Turn the page over.
So oh, my God.
I watched probably close to 100 films, and I listed them in the program. And what I was looking for was when you start researching this, you get the war horses. You get
yeah.
the Wagner used in the Apocalypse Now, which is brilliant, absolutely brilliant use of music. I'm not going to be playing Wagner on the piano. Now,
thank
some
you.
Pianists could, but I had to choose music that I could play.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
not only from difficulty level, but stylistically.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took a lot of research, and I didn't want to do the war horses.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I really wanted to do cartoons because I think I'm a musician because of cartoons, and I think most musicians of my age that you talk to, why did you want to get into music, would have said Saturday morning cartoons.
Wow.
And how important the music was in those. But most of it was like this giant list or the big symphonic works that just did not translate down for me
mm-hmm.
to play
mm-hmm.
at the piano.
Mm-hmm.
And again, somebody else could, but it had to work for my style.
I'm thinking how lucky we are that you're here. Carol, I hope you're listening. I'm sorry you aren't here to hear the concert, and you certainly can't be playing it now one-handedly, but but this is an extraordinary opportunity. Jennifer Goodenberger, 2 p.m., no matter what the newspaper says, folks, don't forget, it's 2 p.m. tomorrow, that's Saturday. And this is also a very generous gift from Jennifer to our community, because this is a benefit for the Performing Arts Center, the PAC, the building that we are have been working for 3 years to save for just such things as this, and lectures, films themselves, and concerts you've been hearing for the last few weeks, Romancing the Pack for the Astoria Music Festival, lots and lots of uses. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for
donating your
brains and your skills and your sense of music to enhance the community. I'm really looking forward to this. 2 p.m. at the PAC. You get your tickets at the door. I will see you there. I'll be helping out with that. And anything you need. Oh, it's on 16th and Franklin. If you don't live here, that's right in Astoria. Can't miss it. Come a little early so you can get comfortable. Open seating. And enjoy the concert. Thank you so much
for being here,
Jennifer.
It's always great, Carol.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. And I do have some music from my next guest, which is the North Coast Symphonic Band, which is playing a concert on Sunday at Liberty. Have a listen. And thanks for being here, folks. Coast Community Radio. This is, you're listening to music from the North Coast Symphonic Band, and I have Dave Becker here, who is the, I'm not sure your exact official title, but you are the musical director and the conductor, is that?
Yes, yeah.
Any other additions? great to have you here. This is the double music part of the program today. I'm delighted. 2 days in a row right here in Astoria. We have concerts. Now, the North Coast Symphonic Band is also at 2 o'clock, and their show is on Sunday at the Liberty Theater, which is 12th and Commercial. And although the concert starts at 2, there is a warm-up, which is always fun, at 1:30 with the Tuba Quartet, and definitely always fun. And the name of the concert, though, let me see if I can get it right. I heard Lloyd Bowler came rolling right off his tongue, but Abernockety Tunes, Humor and Whimsy for Band.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Very good. Very good.
All right. Good.
Abernockety.
Now,
yes.
Abernockety. I love it. But you got to say it a few times.
Right.
I mean, I was practicing
right.
In the car. Tell us, Dave Becker from the North Coast Symphonic Band, where did this come from? What are you doing?
Well, like the title suggests, this is all about just some fun things in music. And, you know, music can be very serious. Music can portray things we can't really put into words. I mean, you know, create great beauty, profound thoughts, you know, all of that. But it's also a lot of fun. And I think I got imprinted in that idea. I think the first concert my parents took me to when I was about 5 years old was to hear Spike Jones.
Nice.
My mother was a fine amateur pianist, and her big hero was Victor Borge. So
I kind of grew up with,
you know, music can be fun. And so we've picked a real variety of pieces that are kind of everything from silly to clever to just really unusual for a piece maybe by a very, very serious composer that one wouldn't expect anything kind of silly from. And so it's I think it's going to be a huge, huge amount of
fun.
Well,
I'm just looking. Your first one is one of my favorites, of course, Comedy Tonight, which so many of us know. I remember when I went to see A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum on Broadway in New York. How long ago was that? I don't even know what year it was, but it was a long time ago.
Right, but what you may not know, I don't know about that tune, that starts the show. And when A Funny Thing on the Way to the Forum was in previews out in Connecticut or, you know, wherever they did shows before they got onto Broadway, it wasn't doing well. And it was kind of a flop. And so they inserted this tune at the beginning to make sure that the audience knew from the very beginning that this was a comedy.
And once they put that
tune in, then it became the big hit, you know, that it was. And so we're doing the same thing. We want to make it really clear.
This is a fun night.
Some it's okay to laugh. It's okay to smile. There's going to be some fun stuff.
Wonderful. So that's, of course, Stephen Sondheim. And you have soloists. Chris Lynn Taylor will be singing. What is she going to sing?
Well, she's performed with us before a few years ago, and I've been kind of looking for an opportunity to get her back to do.
She's quite wonderful.
To do it again. I mean, she's so much fun to have on stage and so easy to work with. So she's going to be doing three hits from Shanghai to Astoria. She's been with the show now for 25 years,
and she's
has sung
terrific.
All these different
so
roles.
So where do the now, you guys are going to be playing along with her?
Right, yeah. So, Dave Robertson,
you're
down from Rockaway Beach, is a professional arranger, and he arranged these for her back when we did them before. And so we'll do those. And I don't know what all she's going to do besides the singing part. That's what's always fun. She's a little unpredictable on stage in a really fun way.
Terrific sense of humor also. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So we'll feature her on Mama's Song and Macy's Song and Lascivious Vivian.
I have to
stop
which is interesting
about pronouncing that.
Because she's the musical director, so of course she knows, and she's been with them so long. She knows all the songs, but in the production, she doesn't sing all of those.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Wow, how fun. Okay, and then I see Martin King is coming.
Right.
He's wonderful. Yes. Clarinet?
Yeah, wonderful clarinetist. A real professional clarinetist that didn't make a living at music, but has played with the Calgary Symphony and various groups. But he's kind of a regular with the group. He plays with us most of the time and comes over from Portland for the concerts, and he loves to solo, and so we've got a great solo for him that also has a little humor in it. I have to be real careful in this interview. I don't want to give too many things away.
But
there are, I think the way, how do we say it in the advertising, he faces some challenges with the instrument or something like that.
Oh, my.
But it's a good piece of music, too.
Well, I have a question because I've seen him with his quartet. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He's come and done concerts. But I don't remember, maybe I'm just forgetting, a lot of humor. So whose idea was it to have him do something funny?
Well, he was fine with that.
It.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I said, you have to ham this up a little bit. And he said, oh, yeah, I can do that.
Okay.
But anyway, it's a nice piece. Another one I've been kind of wanting to do for a while. So.
Well, you know, that's a neat idea that putting a twist on some of these of the performers. I mean,
right.
We pick the tunes, but then you talk to the performers who maybe don't. I mean, we know Chris Lynn is always hamming it up, but some of the performers might not, but you're going to get them going.
Well, I think musicians in general, I mean, classical musicians have a great sense of humor. I mean, there's a whole range of in-jokes, music jokes about musicians and about instruments. And we're going to maybe put a few of those in, too, that... But they're fun to be around because of that, and so they're buying into
Okay, folks, you can quote Dave Becker from the North Coast Symphonic Band on that. Classical musicians have a great sense of humor. Okay, just in case you were wondering. Okay, what else we got here?
Well, our second piece, which is kind of one of the big pieces on it, is basically a serious piece, but it ties into your last guest because it's variations on a theme by Robert Schumann, husband of Clara Schumann, that you and Jennifer were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But the theme is, it's a piece called The Happy Farmer, or there's two different titles, The Jolly Farmer, The Jolly Peasant Returns from Work. And it's a silly little tune that was written for his three children as a little beginning piano piece. And so lots of the audience that have had piano lessons in their youth may have played this silly little tune. I mean, a lot of times it's used as a variations for a tuba player, it's kind of a silly tune. And he's got this wonderful, really interesting, serious piece that takes this little tune and does all amazing things with it. And that piece is probably our biggest challenge. But so it's on there because the piece isn't funny, but the material is funny that he uses. And then we're doing a piece by Percy Grainger, great Australian composer and kind of matinee idol, classical pianist back in the mid-20th century. And he's written amazing music for winds. He's one of the favorite composers of most of us wind conductors out there.
Mm.
But
the piece
he's known for is a little piece called Country Gardens, which was a huge hit back in the 30s and 40s. And that's the piece everyone, the general public, knew him by. And it's just a kind of piece of fluff. It's kind of like a little popular tune almost. And so it's a piece that he kind of began to loathe because that was his signature piece, but he had so much that was so much better that people didn't know about.
Right.
So he wrote kind of versions of it later that really kind of poked fun at the piece itself. So you have this nice little quaint English-sounding piece with some pretty sarcastic stuff going on in the trombone section and things like that.
Yeah, so, but it's the...
But it's
the
a wonderful little piece.
Well, and the composer is satirizing himself.
Yes.
That's kind of fun.
So there's the humor there.
But
it's still a great piece. And then we move on to our other big work of the afternoon, which is the Grand Serenade for an Awful Lot of Winds and Percussion by P.D.Q. Bach.
Oh, no.
And
yes.
So classical music fans will know about Peter Schickele. And
we used to hear P.D.Q. a lot Bach. Of him on the radio. I haven't heard him in a while.
It's been 50 years since he
really?
Created that character. And
oh my gosh.
A lot of people, you know, won't know about him.
Wow.
So we're doing that, and that's written in the grand manner and breaks all the compositional rules of Haydn and Mozart's days, and so that's a lot of fun. And then we move on to Alkali Ike Rag, which is just kind of a little curiosity here. Alkali Ike was... It was a black and white silent film, Alkali Ike's Automobile. And so it's we don't have the film to play with it, to show with it. But so the plot basically is Alkali Ike and Mustang Pete are both kind of wooing a girl, Betty Brown is a widow, and so they want to take her for a horseback ride, and. So Ike shows up with his horse, and Pete shows up with a horse and buggy. And, of course, she chooses Pete. So then she goes off with Pete. So Ike's really upset, so he trades his horse in for an automobile. And this is 1911.
Uh-huh.
And so he gets an old automobile, and then she gets to ride with him. And, of course, it doesn't go well, and the car stalls.
Yeah.
And Ike Smoke gets out to have a look, and it starts rolling down the hill with the girl screaming for help. So you can picture this in a silent movie.
Okay, now, hold on, though. I'm reading the note here. I've never heard of this, and I was going to ask you, where do you come up with this? And then I read the last line here. This is written by a guy named Albert Perfect. What a name, huh?
Yeah.
And it says, on a local note, Albert Perfect is known in Oregon as the composer of the U of O fight song Mighty Oregon.
Right, my alma mater.
The
little subliminal things
okay,
I like
Dave,
to...
We're putting it all together
Yes.
No wonder you know about these.
Yeah, he was also the band director at the University of Oregon
back
in 1915 as a Swedish immigrant.
We're going back over 100 years on this one. Right, very nice.
And then we got a little medley from Mary Poppins, which,
sweet.
You know, that's kind of whimsy and, you know, encapsulated. It's just such a fun show. And then, I skipped one here. Rollo Takes a Walk is by David Maslanka, who is not real well known out of the wind world. I mean, he's probably one of the most eminent composers of the last 30 or 40 years that writes a lot for wind band and very serious, heavy pieces that are wonderful. And but he wrote this piece just for fun, and he writes it to poke fun at Rollo was the name of a fictional character that Charles Ives, the way out there American composer back 100 years ago, would write about. And Rollo was the person that he would write about that had ultra-conservative tastes in music, that only wanted to listen to sentimental old ballads, you know, of the time, and simple music that didn't challenge him at all. And so he takes Rollo on a walk here and challenges him a lot with some surprises.
Yeah, I won't read out loud what it says, because this is some very amusing little notes here that it's a good idea for people to read these first, though. Otherwise, they might get up and walk out on you
guys. Well, we're going to be real careful.
Thinking, God, what is wrong with this band?
They may walk out
like
on
Peter
some of the
Schickalo.
Jokes, though. I'm not worried that they'll walk out on the music.
I see.
We have to be careful about our jokes, because some are real groaners. I don't know how many we'll use. And then we move on to Tight Squeeze, which is a piece by a really talented young woman that lives up in the San Juans, Alex Shapiro. And she's combined audio track with large wind band. And this has been done before, but I think her things work particularly well. And so in her words, describing the music, she says, imagine the classical composer Arnold Schoenberg, known for really hard to challenging music, you know, very dissonant music.
Eek.
Henry Mancini and the great saxophonist Charlie Parker walking into a techno rave club in Havana and staying for at least 3 minutes. And but the piece has a very humorous subject besides that too, and I think it's going to work. It's been a real challenge for us, though. We, you know, to do something with a audio track that we have to stay with and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So
good,
but that's going to be good. And then of course the Shanghai and. We end with Liberty Bell March, which, you know, any of us that are Monty Python fans, the great British comedy troupe, you can't hear the Liberty Bell without thinking of the giant foot coming down at the end. And we're not going to do that, but we're going to play the Liberty Bell because it's a great march.
Wow.
So, but it'll be fun.
Okay, folks, this is going to be a delightful concert. And it's the North Coast Symphonic Band. My guest is Dave Becker, the conductor and musical director. And this is this Sunday, February 21st, at the Liberty Theater, Opernockety Tunes, Humor and Whimsy for Band. The concert begins at 2, but do come at 1:30 and hear the outrageous Astoria Tuba Quartet, which is some of our favorite folks who have also been on the air as well. Dave, thanks so much for coming in and for putting this outrageous concert together.
Thank you, Carol.
A blast. Okay. And you are listening to Coast Community Radio. I have one more guest to come in, but I want to play some music from the North from the Bond Street Blues Band because they are having two nights worth of reunion. Tonight is at the Sandcastle, in Gearhart, the McMenamins Sand Trap. And then tomorrow night is going to be huge at the Astoria Events Center at 8:30, Sand Traps at 7. Have a listen, Bond Street Blues Band, and then we'll welcome my last guest, and I'll tell you some more stuff that's happening.
Shake it, babe. Shake it, babe. I'll shake it, baby. I'll buy you a dime. If you don't shake it now, baby, you won't have a doggone. Shake it, babe.
Is the Bond Street Blues Band again tonight at the Sand Trap, tomorrow night at the Astoria Events Center at 8:30 p.m. with lots of wonderful guests as well. Maggie Kitson will be there and Ron Baldwin, and it's a reunion. Mike Metzner, all kinds of folks. I do want to let you know about an event that's happening Tuesday morning at 10:30 at the Columbia River Maritime Museum. Maria Brooks, who's a documentary producer, is presenting her film The Odyssey of Captain Healy, profiling the life of one of the most famous men on the Pacific coast during the 19th century. And this is being presented in celebration of Black History Month. When you look at the picture and you hear about it, you'll go, huh? The Odyssey of Captain Healy. It was premiered on PBS stations around the country in 1999. Here's the catch. It's the story of a man born a slave who becomes the most celebrated officer on the West Coast in the service that became the U.S. Coast Guard. They called him the ruler of the Arctic, but Captain Healy had secrets to hide. And question, what makes a person black in America? 100 years ago, it was determined by one drop of, quote, black blood, unquote. And today, Barack Obama is our first African-American president, yet he's as black as he is white. And all kinds of things. The film, Maria is a wonderful documentary maker. So that's at the Columbia River Maritime Museum on Tuesday morning. Tons of stuff happening, but I want to introduce you to my last guest. I do want to tell you, though, this is the last weekend for the Coaster Theater's Dead Guilty, Friday and Saturday at 7:30. So catch that if you can. And also another person, these are folks affiliated with KMUN also. Edward James is the director for that. Helen Hill, who's one of our long-time-ago programmers, as well as a generous provider for Coast Community Radio, is going to be at the Bay City Arts Center tomorrow from 3 to 5 with her brand-new book, How Ouzel Found Her Song, a children's book, and a workshop, How to Write Your Own. And the Liberty is having Taylor Lynn, Loretta Lynn's granddaughter. So much happening. Speaking of books, here's the deal. I have in the studio yet another Coast Community Radio personality, and that would be Victoria Stapiello. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having me this afternoon.
You bet. I am very excited because I just got to see Victoria's brand new book. And this is not for children, although it can be read to children. Yeah, it's for everybody.
There's nothing in it that would be offensive for a child.
The name of it, This Side of Sand Island, Reflections on, I love this, Fish, Fins, and Finding Out About Family on the Lower Columbia. Now, that is a mouthful, but that's because Victoria is a prolific writer, and she's also, I think, 100% Finn.
Yep.
And so tell us all about, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
This is wonderful. And Victoria is going to be taking part in the Fisher Poets Gathering next weekend.
Right.
You'll be at the Voodoo Room on Friday night at 5 and then at Gala. Also at 5 on Saturday.
Right.
What's the story? Where did the book come from?
Okay. So in 1993, my husband and I moved into the house that my dad was born in Ilwaco. I was my father's only child. And long story short, I ended up becoming a freelance writer, and I did news reporting covering county government for Pacific County. And I also was what I guess you could call a commentary writer. And the editor, Matt Winters, gave me terrific leeway in terms of what I wrote about. And so I wrote about things like environmental policies that were impacting fish runs. I wrote about how you stack firewood properly in order to get it to cure. I did, you know, it was all over the place. And with one of my essays, he said, this sounds like the title of a book. And it was called This Side of Sand Island.
Oh.
And the significance is that when you're in Ilwaco, you look toward Oregon, and there's an island in the foreground, Sand Island, and the state line between Oregon and Washington is between the island and Ilwaco. It's a little bit of geography. And this book does have a couple of maps in it. At any rate, over the years, occasionally people would tell me that they really liked what I was writing about Finnish culture and the sort of, you could call it kind of folksy stuff. I was drawing on my mother's family, who are all Finns, who immigrated to the States in probably around 1865, 1870. And then my dad's parents immigrated in the early 20th century. So I had these two different kinds of, there are different waves of Finnish migration into the United States. And these two branches of my family came from different waves of immigration. At any rate, I realized that I had sort of a body of work that I had accumulated over time. And you've probably heard this before, that you can be a writer your whole life, but until you publish a book, you're not an author. So this is a big deal for me to have a physical object I can hand to somebody or give to someone that is a collection of my work. And it all wraps around all these issues. Fish, because I really care about what has happened to the salmon runs in the Pacific Northwest. I was living in a town full of commercial fishermen, but they were also in decline because of what had happened to fish runs. And, of course, Ilwaco is a very Finnish community, even more Finnish than Astoria, although Astoria is a major Finnish community in the United States. So I learned a lot about Finnish culture from my neighbors. I learned a lot more about my dad's family. Mm. I was not raised with my dad's family. I only saw my dad a handful of times before I finished high school. But yet I was his only child. Mm. So toward the end of life, we became a lot closer. End of his life, we became a lot closer. I learned a lot more stuff. And to tell the truth, in these essays, often I've sort of romanticized his life. He was a commercial fisherman the whole time. He ran a 36-foot troller out of Ilwaco. And so I have this sort of romantic take about fishing and about what it's like to be out on the ocean. It's a combination of tedium and adventure. So over the years, I've been a reader at Fisher Poets Gathering. It started in 1998, And I started reading for Fisher Poets probably 2000. And I have been one of the readers for 11 years, wow, off and on.
So have you been reading essays?
Yes, just reading essays. And to tell the truth, I'm just reusing the material I've had. But when you publish for a newspaper, that's a very transitory kind of experience, you know, for a writer.
Now, you're not living in Ilwaco anymore.
No.
Are you still writing?
I'm still writing for the Chinook Observer. For some reason,
okay,
they haven't fired me, even though I'm on the other side of Sand Island. Anyway,
right.
So that's how I just decided, okay, let's pull this together. I tell my husband that it's almost like a vanity thing, you know, to create a book. I had great help. One, I had Nancy Slavin, who was not familiar with my work, edited to find the things that would be curious or puzzles for people who don't live in the Lower Columbia. Mm-hmm. And then young man, Ryan Pedersen, who lives down in the Nehalem area, did the book design and created the special maps. I received a grant from the Finlandia Foundation, which is based, of all places, in Southern California, to help pay for it. And I got support in my application from Mike Swanson, who's the president of the NACEL-based Finnish American Folk Festival, and also from our Dinah Urell, who here in town.
Right.
So I've had a lot of help from people.
So what's the balance of the Finnish, the fish and the Finns? Do you mix it all up?
Pretty much, because I don't think you, in this part of the world, I don't think you can talk with Finnish people without getting into the issue of fishing, commercial fishing, the environment that supports fishing. It's all mixed together. And as some Finns will tell you, if you go to Finland, they all seem to be environmentalists. And in a way, I think that's one of the big cuts in terms of the breakouts in between commercial fishing people and people who engage in logging. My dad's side was all commercial fishing. My mom's side were all loggers and mostly independent folks. But fishermen know that if you don't take care of habitat, you will not have any fish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like comes right along, you know, with what they experience. They know the difference.
I think a lot of us around here have learned that. We've learned a lot about commercial fishermen through the Fisher Poets Gathering.
Right.
Even though there are fishermen living everywhere around here.
Right.
But in Fisher Poets, hearing all of the poetry, the song, the essays, the camaraderie, the humor. I have grown tremendously and come to understand where we are all on the same side, whether or not we started that way.
So Fisher Poets is next weekend. There's evening programs on Friday. There's daytime programs in a variety of locations on Saturday. There's more evening programs at like 6-8 venues on Saturday night. There's some more stuff on Sunday.
Well, actually, Coast Community Radio will be broadcasting live, I believe. We do it every year on Friday night and Saturday night from the Astoria Events Center. And my show next week is all Fisher Poets. They're not all poets. They're all artists.
There's essayists and songwriters.
A painter who's going to Corey Arnold. Not a painter, a photographer whose work is already at Imogen Gallery.
Okay.
But he's going to be coming in because he wasn't here for the opening. And then Brett Vanden Heuvel from the Columbia River Keeper.
Right.
And then we have a couple of women from Alaska coming, Brittany and Emily, to talk about.
Fisher Poets has gotten really big. The first year I read was 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole event fit into the Wet Dog. And I have to say, that environment was fabulous because it's something to get up and read something like I write in front of a crowd, some of whom are drinking and eating in the back.
Mm-hmm.
But in the front were people who were the kind of hardcore fishing guys that looked just like my dad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to read something and see them respond, you know, visually to what you've written is a real charge. to tell the truth, Fisher Poets has a lot of tourists now. People who know nothing about commercial fishing just heard, like, oh, there's this event, and Astoria is pretty cool, and
but
let's go.
But it's still very poignant.
Oh, yeah.
People tell stories, and you're right, and yet I haven't felt that it. What's hard for me is knowing that it's so big that you have to choose.
Yep.
So some people stay in one space and let the poets come through, or the writers, whatever, and others go follow particular people from one to another. But
I have my favorites. I look at the schedule and I figure out where am I going to hear Gino and where am I going to hear Holly, go from there.
Right, and it's wonderful. And also, this was the first Fisher Poets gathering in the world. Originally, yes, it was. It was fashioned a bit after Cowboy Poets, but it was the first Fisher Poets gathering.
Right.
And now they're happening all over because some of our people went out in the United States as well as elsewhere. And other people picked up on it. And it's quite wonderful. Astoria and this region is good for that. This is the birthplace of the tenor guitar gathering, in the world.
Yep.
And it's coming up again at the end of May, folks, although it will be dedicated to the founder, Mark Josephs, who sadly died this past month. But we will still be celebrating the music and how important it all is. So
I want to give a plug for the Gear Shack, which is a regular thing that happens at Fisher Poets. And it's a place where if you're interested in buying anything that has been produced by people who participate, there's CDs, there's books,
there's
monographs.
Also a silent auction,
and
I think,
there's a silent
goes on
auction
there, too.
That supports the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gear Shack is a 1254 Commercial this year. And it's open from 1 until 9 on Friday and Saturdays. So people can stop in there. My book will be there. Lots of other books will be there. And there's a host of volunteers who take care of it and help you find what you're looking for.
And I'm glad you mentioned that word, volunteers. Like everything else in this town and in this area, volunteers are at the core. If you're interested in volunteering, you can probably go online and go to Fisher Poets Gathering and find out how to plug in. Because the more the merrier. It's really fun to take part in that. Meanwhile, Victoria, I am delighted that you have come out, and the book looks beautiful, and I'm going to buy me a copy right away. Maybe not today. I don't know if you have an extra to buy right off you, right now.
I think
you got
one
a car
of the ways
full
that you
now?
Handle books is you start having a trunk that has a box of
there
books in
go,
it.
There you go, folks. So if you see Victoria in the street, just flag her down and buy her book. Otherwise, in addition, come next week and hear her do her reading. And the good news is Victoria, even though she moved out of Ilwaco, she lives close enough so that we can nab her and have her come in.
That's a while.
and have her come in and read for you. So get in touch. Victoria Stoppiello, This Side of Sand Island, Reflections on Fish, Fins, and Finding Out About Family on the Lower Columbia. Congratulations and thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to put on a little bit of Terry Robb, who is playing. Here we go. Terry Robb is going to be at the Peninsula Performing Arts Center in Long Beach tomorrow evening. And he's quite wonderful. With him is one of his regulars and someone in the band who's actually on this album. And Albert, I wrote it down, but can I read my writing? Albert Rita, that's tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock. And you might check in with them, make sure they still have tickets for that. And while you can hear Terry Robb in the background, I'll remind you that there's a Chinese New Year celebration for Grays River Valley Center in Rossburg. And Astor Street Opry Company auditions tomorrow Jennifer Goodenberger at 2 at the Performing Arts Center. John Broderick at 7 at Pier 11 Winecraft. He's one of the originators of the Fisher Poets Gathering. And Sand Dune has Countryside Ride. Grays River Community College 10 a.m. photography show. And author Ellen Urbani is 7 p.m. at the Hoffman and with Landfall, and she's also doing a 1 to 3:30 writer's workshop. Finnish film, speaking of the Finns, at the Apollo Archives, Drifting Clouds. That's tomorrow morning at 11. Sunday, Fort George has Cedar Teeth, Seaside Brewing, Scratching String Band. I love them. Raymond Theater at 2 has a Patsy Cline tribute. North Coast Symphonic Band at the Liberty at 2 with a 1:30 tuba quartet. And the Castle Rock Men's Ensemble is at St. James Episcopal Church. Tuesday, Maria Brooks, 10:30 a.m. at the Columbia River Maritime Museum with her fascinating documentary. And the last Tuesday, poetry at the Port of Call, 7 to 9 Tuesday evening. Hey, the Seaside Jazz Festival starts next Thursday. I'll be playing some of their music Friday. Couldn't get a time for them in this year, but they're fabulous. And hope you get to some of these events. Thanks so much for being here, folks.